This episode contains depictions of graphic violence that some may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised.
Often people don't realize how much information they have, how many solutions they have. And not just, I mean, obviously when you're in extreme and you're in fight or flight, it just takes charge. But so often we push those thoughts away. Like, we don't think we have the answers. We go to other people for things. But it's such an example of, we have everything in us, right? Mm-hmm. To find the solutions. Hello and welcome to Spiritually Hungry. We're very excited to have guests today. Their names are Liel Shitrit and Shoham Cohen. And they are here all the way from Israel to tell us their story of survival and the things that they have learned. You were both, well, I want to welcome you both here today with us. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having us.
And you were both at the festivals in Israel on October 7th. We both want to hear your story, but I want to start with this one question. I call myself a change junkie, meaning I seek change. And we talk about change a lot with the work that Michael and I do. And I always say that people are forever changed by events, either positive ones or negative ones. And often we don't realize we're changed and we don't choose the change. So I want to ask each of you, how would you describe yourselves before October 7th? Like, if you had to say in a sentence or a few words, and then how are you, or how do you consider yourself? Who are you after October 7th? So let's start with you, Liel.
Okay, so I think that I didn't appreciate things before the October 7th. Like, I thought I'm appreciating things and I'm really grateful for things, but I found out that not really. After the October 7th, so I really started to... I appreciate much more things that are not physical. Like, I think that connections are like more important to me than money and to work. And like, I'm just waking up every day and I just smile because I woke up. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't believe that I'm waking up every day, that I open my eyes. Like, it's something that I find a miracle. Like, just the opening my eyes and being still alive. So I think that is the most things that changed in me.
And do you find any negative effect from what happened, like trauma?
Yeah, I'm not sleeping at night at all. I'm having flashbacks. I have like a very difficult PTSD. Like, the first 2 months, I couldn't sleep for days. I didn't eat nothing for 2 months because I had the smell of burned bodies in my nose, so I couldn't get rid of it. I thought that I was very paranoid. Like, I thought everybody is going to kill me. I couldn't go to the street by myself because I thought somebody is going to kill me. So I was with knives in my socks and a pepper spray. And it's like, it's tough. I'm living in Ashkelon. It's the most fired city in Israel. So even when I came back in the October 7th to my home after 12 hours, so 6 rockets fell in houses, like in circle to my house, and bomb fragment fell at my home. So it was really intense because you hear the bombing every day. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I couldn't get out of the situation.
And I want to ask the same question to you.
Before October 7, I was pretty normal. I liked freedom, party. I liked everything. But after the massacre, I appreciated more things, like every small thing. Like sunrise, sunset. Appreciate very much everything around me. Like every small brief, something like this. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The fact that I'm alive and God did many miracles in the same day. And it made me believe again, because I wasn't so believing person.
Like believing in a God or a higher power.
Yeah. And now it made me believe again, much more.
So I'm going to ask you more about that in a little bit, because I want to hear more about that deep process that you went through and that connection. But I'll ask the same question. Do you have any negative effects or negative changes from that day?
Of course. The trauma is bad, and it's affecting us every day, I think. Like yesterday, we went to a museum and we saw some art, and even the art was intense because
it brought to the surface.
It was triggering.
Yeah, the art was triggered us at some point. Yeah, it's not easy.
So tell us about October 7th, how your, what your experience was, what you saw, what you felt.
I felt scared like I've never been my entire life. And we couldn't know that what's happening around us. So people were contacting us at the same day. And what they've been told us, that's the thing we knew. Like someone called me and said, you have to run now to one of the kibbutzim. And half an hour later, he told me that all of the kibbutzim around me was occupied by Hamas. So we thought that the entire country was lost and we don't have a place to come back. We just wanted to go back home, sleep. Safe place.
And were you together at the
no.
party?
No.
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 What hour did it start? Was it 6 a.m.?
6:30.
6:30.
And you had been up. You were awake.
Yeah. Like I came to the party on Friday with two of my friends. They work there as a massage. They have a massage stand and parties and stuff like this. So we came on Friday at 6, like in the evening. It was like really early. The party just started at like 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. So 6:30, it's when the sun rises. So everybody just want like to party at the sunrise and dance to the sun. So it was really confusing when the sunrise came, like, the whole sky was in hundreds of missile trails. So it was kind of like everybody thought maybe we took too much drugs, maybe we drink too much. But like I wasn't on drugs and I like did not drink even like maybe one cup the whole night. So I was like, oh my God, it's war.
That's what you thought?
Yeah, but because I'm living in Ashkelon, so I thought, okay, 10 minutes and it's done. The party is going to come back. The music is going to play again. But instead, like hundreds of terrorists came and murdered all of my friends.
How much time between the missiles and when you saw the terrorists come?
So me and my friends, we decided to stay in the party area because, as I said, we thought the party is going to continue because we used to this. Like, I'm living my whole life under rockets. So it's not new to me. They're firing at us every month, every 2 months. They're firing just what they have. So I'm kind of used to this. So we stayed at the party area, but we started to hear the gunfire just maybe an hour after this.
Oh, a whole hour? From 6:30 to 7:30?
Yeah. Wow. Everybody just escaped from the party. And not a lot of people stayed in the party area, like maybe a few hundreds. And the party was with 4,000 people. So they stayed only a few hundreds in the party area. So we needed to like fold all of our stuff, the massage stand, the beds, the gazebo, all of this. And so at 7:30, we heard the gunfire and we thought, okay, maybe there is a one or two terrorists. And the gunshots we hear, it's the IDF shooting on the terrorists. But it wasn't like this. So in 7:45, our friend is calling us and is telling us, okay, listen, you need to stay in the place you're staying because they're in the cities. They're not in the kibbutzes. They're in the cities shooting RPGs at houses. They're killing everyone. All the area that you're staying in is full of terrorists. You need to get safe. And we're like, stop messing with us. Why are you saying this kind of stuff? And it was like, I'm not kidding. Like, you need to get safe. You're having like hundreds of terrorists surrounding you. And then we thought, okay, so we need to be like close to the car. If something, we will just ride. So we brought our Jeep like next to the place we were being. And 8 and 12 minutes, this is the point, like, I even picture it. Like, I have a videos. Picture, right. Yeah, I have videos, like, from the whole first hour, I think. And so at 8 and 12 minutes, I'm looking forward to my head, and I'm seeing 100 of people just running and screaming, and the hundreds of terrorists behind them just shooting at everybody.
How far were they from you?
200 meters.
But they were coming towards you?
Yeah. So we jumped into the Jeep. We started to drove. As we approaching to the parking lot, we saw our friend Oad. So we picked him up with us. And I'm seeing in the mirrors, like, a lot of my friends are running and just being shot in the head. Like, people that I danced with them a half hour ago. It was like, this is the first moments when I didn't get the situation. I was like, why they're shooting at us? Like, that? Why? What we did? Like, everybody was just dancing barefoot and hanging like an hour before of this. Like, what we did to them? Like, and this is the first moment when I really realized what is happening, because I saw a lot of my friends just getting shot. And I couldn't get back to them to pick them up with me. And they couldn't, like, do nothing, just to run.
So you're in the Jeep.
In the Jeep.
You're ahead of them and you're looking behind you seeing this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So as we're approaching to the parking lot, we see a lot of cars. And they're shouting to us, listen, we're surrounded. We can't get out of here. We can't get out of there. We're surrounded from all of the sides. And this is where we started a little bit panicking. Then I saw my friend Alex Lubanov. So we picked him up with us. And so at this point, we are in the car, 5 people. Me, Dor, Gilad, Alex, and Doad. So Alex is always on Shabbat, is going to a Jeep rides on this area with his son Tom. He's 2 years old. So he told us, okay, I know the area. I can navigate us, like, to Kibbutz Be'eri. So maybe we can stay at some family house in there or something like this. So we saw a hill, and on the hill was an IDF Jeep. So we start, okay, an IDF Jeep. It's a good idea. We need to go to this Jeep. They will save us. So we're approaching to this IDF Jeep on the hill. It was abandoned, full of blood. Wow. After this, we've been told the soldiers that were in it was kidnapped. And we found an M16. It was broken, but we still took it with us because it was better than nothing. Like, we took the M16 with us. We took a few bullets that we found in the vehicle. Five bullets. Then we were ahead to Kibbutz Be'eri towards the field. And we saw a lot of terrorists are coming from this area. And
towards you or away?
Yeah.
Towards you.
Yeah. So we started, like, to go in circles in these fields. So we stopped in some point, and Alex get out of the car, and Oad. Alex needed to call his wife, Michal. So they drop off the car. We told them, like, stay close to the car, and maybe 20, maybe 30 seconds, something like this, I think. After they drop off the car, a group of 8 terrorists jumped on us with the truck. and a few motorcycles. So Oad and Alex just ran away to the bushes to hide in there. And we drove with the Jeep, so the fire was on us. We were on a run with this group of terrorists for 15 minutes. They're just spraying us with bullets. So the car was hit, but not really. They drove like this. So there will be...
Zigzagging.
Yeah, zigzagging.
So the dust would pick up.
Yeah, so the dust will pick up. So they couldn't see clearly where to shoot. So...
For saying this 15 minutes. This is
For 15 minutes.
At this point... Are you praying? Are you crying? Are you, what are you doing?
Okay, so from the moment we started, like from where we get to the parking lot, like I was started to praying. I was like, Shema Yisrael, Shema Yisrael. I was just screaming Shema Yisrael for every second.
And did you have... And,
but I wasn't like in panic and I wasn't scared. I wasn't like... I wasn't crying. I was just like in a really survival mood.
Right.
So I was just thinking where we should go, what we should need to do.
What's next? Because we heard from Shoham that he didn't really have a connection to God before. Did you feel like when you're praying, are you actually praying to God? And you,
Yeah, like I always believed in God. Like I'm coming from a very believing family. Mm-hmm. They're not religious. Like not everybody is religious, but this is the spirit in our home. Like we believe in God, we're praying. But I think this is like for the 2, maybe 3 years that was before the Nova, I was kind of disrespectful to God. And I think this is what needed to be happening so my belief will come back because I was out of the way. Yeah.
So you weren't really connecting. When you say disrespectful to God, does that also mean you acted in ways that were disrespectful to yourself? Like things that you wouldn't normally do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like when I say disrespectful to God, it's disrespectful to me.
Right.
Because it's not like God is sitting in some office and is like, oh, this year.
Shame on you.
Shame on you. He doesn't care. He's God. He doesn't need me. But I was disrespectful for myself. Like I did a lot of stuff. Like I was lying and I was doing, maybe I was talking bad to my parents. And I did a lot of stuff that now I can't imagine myself doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So I really needed this wake up call, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I will continue.
Okay, so now the dust is lifting.
Yeah.
Your friend is driving in zigzags. So they're not having a hard time.
Yeah.
Aiming.
So after this, we stopped. Like, we lost them and we stopped. And I'm calling Alex. Alex told me, oh my God, you're alive. I thought you were dead. Like, I heard the screams, I heard the shooting. And I'm like, I'm asking him, Alex, you need us to come back. What we need to do? And he's like, I can't talk. He was whispering. He told me I can't talk. I'm hearing a motorcycle. So we need to hide. I will speak to you later. About half an hour after this, Alex was kidnapped from there. It's already 148 days. His wife, Michal, is pregnant. She need to give birth like... every second, like this is her last.
What's his
month.
Last name? Alex's last name?
Lubanov.
Yeah. Was he one of the guards at the?
No, he was the bar manager. He also my boss, like in real life. Also a friend of mine.
Wow.
And you haven't heard from, there's no.
No, nothing. I am really just praying for him every day.
And how is his wife doing?
Really, it's like, pregnancy is hard, so imagine to do it with a 2-year-old boy and a kidnapped husband that you don't even know nothing about what's happening with them.
So much uncertainty, fear,
It's so tough. It's so tough. Like, nothing could help her. Like, the only thing that could help her is to bring Alex home immediately. Like, not now. It should be yesterday.
And who was with Alex?
Ohad. But Ohad managed to escape.
Because they ran in different directions,
yeah,
right?
It's a really important point for me to say that the one who kidnapped Alex was civilians, not Hamas members, not jihad members, just innocent civilians.
How do we know that?
They were barefoot and with no armor. It was 13, 14, and 15 years old boys with their father. Yes. And this is like the family activities they're doing. It's just to come and kidnap people from their families.
So we don't know where Alex is.
He's somewhere in Gaza.
Do we know if he's held by Hamas or by...
No, we don't know. They took him. Like, they just kidnap him. Like, it's unbelievable, such of things.
Well, children learn what they are, you know, they live what they are taught. So if they're raised in a home that teaches hate and violence, then they are raised to hate.
Just to rob people, just to take our stuff, just to make some mess. A lot of bodies after the second wave, like as Shoam said, they came and they just opened bodies and took the organs.
Or set them on fire or...
The second wave was what? When did that happen?
I think a couple of hours later.
Yeah. Like they were coming out just like this.
10 o'clock, I think.
Because everybody was many had already been dead or kidnapped, but then there were others hiding still.
Yeah.
They came with the Jeep. They came and they just threw bodies on the Jeep and took them to Gaza with a lot of things that they robbed from the parking lot or the party area or people, just like me, when I hid in the woods. And they shot things in Arabic, and I didn't know what they're saying, but people around me knew, and they told us, come, we will kill you, give us your stuff, and something like this. And they just...
How close were they to you?
What?
How close were they to you?
Few meters, I think. They circled us and they tried to rob us. And all of the people that I've been with, they tried to fight them with sticks and rocks. And they left us alone and went to the park.
So were you in a different area where you were... somehow more protected or
no
just different areas. We were like on the Jeep and he was running, so it's like a different places, different stories.
So maybe continue.
So we stopped the car.
Where do you know where you were geographically?
So for the first 10 minutes there was a communication. I called my cousin to ask him, because he like was for years in the IDF and was working with the police. So I called him and I was like, terrorists are running after me. What should I do? And he was like, what? He was just waking up.
He didn't know.
And I was like, what should I do? And he was like, I don't know, protect yourself. And so nobody really could help us.
Did you call your parents?
I called my mom when I saw the rockets. Like at first at 6:30, maybe at 7, because I saw they're going above us head. So it's like, oh, it's to Ashkelon. I need to call my mom so she won't be like surprised. Like she can like wake up and go to the shelter. But I didn't know. I didn't realize the situation. So when we were in this field, so they cut off the communication. So we couldn't even to call the police. Like
who cut off?
The terrorists cut off the communication. Yeah. For an hour, I think. Maybe a little bit more. So we stopped the car, and because it's a really, really old Jeep, it's very loud and very noisy. Mm-hmm. So we had to turn it off and turn it on all the time so we could hear what is happening. So I was looking out of the window. We tried to open Google Maps and stuff like this. Nothing was working.
Right? I didn't even think about that because you couldn't even go online. So you don't know where you are.
Yeah.
You don't even, and even if you did, you don't know where they are.
Yeah. Right. So I saw like, we were really close to Gaza in this point. We were really, really close to Gaza and we didn't know.
So you were driving the wrong direction.
Yeah. We yeah. would like, instead of go north, we go south. Yeah. Like everybody was running to this way and we were running to this way because we like, where there was the IDF vehicles. So we just thought, we assumed it's going to be a good idea to go on the path that the terrorists took so they wouldn't come back in the same way. So that's where we drove south and not north. So I'm looking out of the window and I'm starting to see like some voice that is not my voice. Like just guided me and just told me like, you need to look at the birds. You need to look at the birds. And
really?
Yeah. So I was looking out of the window and I'm seeing that every time that I hear gunfire, all the birds are coming from the trees and doing circles above the trees like this. So I knew where the terrorists are coming from. Wow. So I started to navigate us through this because I knew they were coming from that way or that way, so I could navigate us.
Wow, that's so powerful.
Yeah, and like I'm always telling like it wasn't me.
It was God.
Like yeah, it was God. No, it was just like literally telling me.
I've had those moments where it's look like at this. A voice comes like almost behind you.
Yeah,
it's like behind your head. It's not from inside.
It's not
something
from inside.
Over you.
Yeah,
and I people often say, how do you know what intuition is, or how do you know when you're getting real messages? He said, it comes like that, you know, it comes from above, behind, like a whisper in your ear.
You don't feel like it's coming from inside.
No.
You're really feeling like it's another power.
It's divine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we started to navigate through my navigations and then I called the cops. Like the communication was back. I called the police and maybe 2 minutes after they picked up, I was like, at first I was saying, okay, I need you to find my location from my phone and tell me what is the best way and the safer way to get out of here right now. And he was like, I can't do this. I'm sorry. Like, we don't have these tools. I was like, really? But like, they're trying to kill me. I was like, yeah, the army know about this party. They're trying to get to you.
Wow.
And 2 minutes later, I'm seeing a motorcycle from the mirror and I'm screaming to the door, drive. And we started to drive and we were again on this run and again and again and again, like for 6 or 7 times.
Really?
Yeah. Each time was with 4, 5, 6. One time with 7 group of terrorists. I can't like say nothing, but it was like a lot of miracles. Like a lot, it's not like enough. It's not enough word to say.
To say it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's
truly.
Unbelievable. Yeah, because maybe like the car was hidden, but not the tears. So we could still drive and drive and drive. And then we came to a curve on the road, and all this time,
are you on a paved road or are you on the
dirt.
Side on dirt?
On dirt. Yeah. We're on the fields all this time. We're running just in fields, so we're coming to a curvy road, and then for the first time, they're approaching not from behind but in front. So a group of 4 terrorists coming in front of us. So we starting to drive on them.
And towards them? Towards them. Wow.
And they're just doing like this and coming and started to chase us. So one motorcycle is managed to come to Gilad's window and he shoot him in the head. And Gilad is still alive.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is he okay?
No, none of us is okay.
No, but I mean, does he have...
yeah, but he's okay. Physically, he's okay, yeah.
Wow. Cognitively, like his mind?
Yeah, yeah.
He said he got hit in the head?
Yeah, 2.5 weeks later, he came back to the military.
Wow.
Yeah. Came to fight
this
back.
This is like Crazy.
Yeah. It is.
And he was the driver?
No.
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 He was sitting in the back.
Okay.
So
you were next to him?
Yeah, I will explain about this a little bit because they were with the Kalashnikovs. So the bullet of Kalashnikov is exploding the second it hits something. So because it wasn't from the window, it was from the door.
Mm-hmm.
So it exploded in the door and then all the bullet just came into his head, but without the
pieces, like it was already.
Yeah, no, a lot of pieces were like this and the half of the bullet was stuck in his head. And like something like this was just bleeding because
a burn.
Yeah, because there was a big burn. So like this and then the bullet and the. So.
And he's probably in shock.
Is he conscious?
Yeah. He's conscious. And he's screaming to us, they shot me in the head.
Oh, my God.
And I'm just looking out of the window like this. And I see the terrorist coming to my window with the Kalashnikov to my head. And I'm just looking at him like he was with a mask. He was like this with his black evil eyes. And I don't know. If it was because they were drugged, so his eyes was looking so madly insane and evil, or because he was just insane and evil, so I don't know. So I was looking at his eyes, and I thought, okay, this is like my last second. It was, I think, maybe 2 seconds, 3 seconds, but it felt for me like an hour.
Time probably stood still.
Yeah, time just like froze. I was just looking at him. I saw a lot of things just going through my mind. Like I was thinking about a lot of stuff, a lot of like good memories. And I looked him in the eyes and I just started to scream at him, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. And he was so surprised because I didn't took my head down or something. I was just looking at him and screaming with all of my lungs, Shema Yisrael. And this is gave though a few more seconds because he was surprised just to kick him off with the car.
Wow.
So Dor managed to kick him off with the car and another terrorist came from the back. Dor managed to kick him off too. And another one. And then we were on a run just with one motorcycle for 20 minutes, I think, more. And then we lost him. And then we were ahead to... I have all of this recorded because I was with the police officer on the phone.
At this time.
So it's all recorded.
It's interesting that your inclination, your instinct wasn't to duck. Like most people, there's a gun pointed at them.
Yeah.
You take cover.
I think that maybe because I knew, maybe in the back of my head, I wasn't really thinking, but maybe it was in the back of my head that if I'm doing this, so Dor will get shot in the head. So I didn't want him to die. But after this, we came to 232 road, but we weren't driving on the road. We were on the fields still. And we were driving and I'm with the officer on the phone and he is telling me, you need to go to Kibbutz Be'eri, you need to go to Kibbutz Be'eri. Like this is the main thing he was telling to us. And we're like, okay, but we're like, he's shot in the head. We can't go to Kibbutz Be'eri. We need to go to a hospital. And he was yelling at us, no, you need to go to Kibbutz Be'eri. And we're like, okay. And so we were near Kibbutz Be'eri and we decided to go towards Kibbutz Be'eri to go to a hospital because Gilad. We didn't like thought in any point that he's going to survive. But really tried to show him like that we think he will survive. Yeah. So as we're approaching to Kibbutz Alumim, there were 2 trucks full of terrorists on the road waiting just for us. And we were targeted by an RPG. So
it's a crazy story.
Yeah. So as we see them, we're going hard left to the fields.
Yeah.
And yeah, so they were firing the RPG at us, and it was like it felt a few meters, maybe a, not meters, like maybe a centimeters, like something like this from our car, the RPG missile. Like the whole car was four wheels on the air and then back again to the road. And so we managed to go to the fields again. We did a hard left. And then two more terrorists jumped on us from the bushes.
They were on motorcycle?
No. They just they were hiding in the bushes to just shoot people there trying to run. At this point, we were like two and a half hours on the run already. So I'm telling the officer, listen, the gate in Berry should be open and there is need to be an ambulance that wait for us. Because he with a bullet in his head. And he was like, yeah, yeah, okay, it will be done. It will be done. So we're coming back to Berry. And the first thing I see is everybody just shot. Like everybody is dead in the entrance, in the cars, everybody just dead. So right near the entrance to Berry, on the right side, there is a motorcycle, not motorcycle, bicycle shop. And we're hearing from Berry shouts in Arabic. We're hearing them singing the songs in Berry in Arabic. So I'm telling the officer, listen, there is no more Berry. Like they occupied Berry. You understand this? And it was like, uh-oh, oops. Something like this. And it was like, okay, good luck. Good luck, guys. He told us like, good luck, guys. And we're coming to this, it was on a little hill, this bicycle shop. So I'm seeing the terrorists, like a lot of them just everywhere. And so I'm deciding to jump alone of the Jeep.
Out?
Yeah, to jump out of the Jeep alone because I don't know how to drive. Dor is driving, Girad with the bullet in his head. If we want to like find a safe place to hide, so I'm the only option who can get out of the Jeep. So if there's a terrorist in the building, they will shoot me. Because if they're shooting Dor, we did nothing in this. Like I can't drive, so it can't be only me. So I jumped out of the car and I'm hearing a lot of screams in Arabic. I'm seeing the terrorist. I'm like, I'm going with my head down. I'm just trying to open all of the doors. There was 10, maybe 15 doors. They were all locked. I was even yelling, Jews, Jews, so they will open the doors. But it was closed. So I circled the building and I found a door that was half plastic and half of grain glass, like the old ones. The door didn't have a lock or something. Even the handle was broken, but it's like the only thing that was open. So I ran back to Dor and Gilad. I screamed them to come. So we hide in this place. We come to this bathroom. It was a bathroom. And it have also a little shower in it. Dor broke the door to the shower with his hand. And the first thing we did is to take all the towels and spread them on the floor so they don't hear the movements. And we bandaged Gilad's head with towels. And Dor was sitting on the floor and just taking the handle like this in his hands. So if they're trying to open this, they will think that it's locked. So they couldn't do this. 20 minutes after we came to this bathroom, also the Hamas came to this building because, as I said, it's on a hill. So you can see also Kibbutz Alumim. You can see the 232 road and you can see the entrance to Berry. So it's a very good point if you're a shooter. I'm sorry.
No.
I mean, I just have to pause for a second. You're so courageous and both of your friends. I mean, the one that was driving?
Dor.
I mean, he sounds like a superhero out of an action film. I mean,
yeah.
the driving like that for 2.5 hours to escape all of that, and to think to put the towels down, hold the doorknob. I mean, it's literally like a movie. It's
I don't know how we
even think of those things. But
I don't know how we thought about this. Like, as we came to this bedroom, I was like, okay, we need to spread all the towels on the floor. Yeah. But how do I know this?
But I think that that's the thing. When often people don't realize how much information they have, how many solutions they have. And not just, I mean, obviously when you're in extreme and you're in fight or flight, it just takes charge. But so often we push those thoughts away. Like, we don't think we have the answers. We go to other people for things. But it's such an example of, we have everything in us, right? Mm-hmm. To find the solutions.
Yeah. It's like, it's the accurate thing to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... where have I been?
You're in the Hamas.
So the Hamas now comes because they can see all of the different views. It's a great vantage point for them.
So they came 50, maybe 60 Hamas members.
And you saw them?
No, we heard them because we were in this toilet. At first, we were paralyzed. We were like, we were in shock, like, of the amount of people that we heard outside of our door. We were like in total shock. We were like, oh my God, there are like 60 of them. I knew that if they're opening the door, it's like they're shooting Gilad, they're shooting Dor, and they will rape me. Like, this is what they're going to do. They're going to rape me, and then they're going to kill me. And the whole time, we hiding in this bathroom for 6 hours, 6.5 hours.
And they're still in the building?
Yeah. Outside of the door. They weren't in the building.
But they were outside.
They were outside our door. Like, we saw them.
The shadows.
Like shadows. The shadows.
Wow.
We saw the shadows the whole time. So Gilad and me, we were hiding behind the curtain of the shower because there was windows. So we didn't want them to see us through the windows. So after 4 hours, the oxygen was leaking. We were all feeling dizzy.
Wow.
We were all just like, it was a bathroom. It was really smelly. And all the bodies that were outside of this bathroom, the smell was terrible. Like, we couldn't smell the bodies, and plus all the blood from Gilad's head. So a lot of insects come to the bathroom, and flies were with us all this time because of the blood. And we can't even breathe loud. We can't talk to each other. We can't to communicate with each other. My phone died the second we came to Be'eri. So I was with Dor's phone. So I was talking with a friend of Dor and mine. He was talking with all the units of the army. Like 6 or 7 different units. They were all telling us the whole time, we're coming, we're on the way, we're coming. And like another hour is passing, and another hour, and nobody's coming. So after, I think, the first hour, I heard a lot of battles from like the IDF and the terrorists, and they won each one of them. So I could really hear them getting slaughtered because they weren't killing people. They were slaughtering people. So after the first hour, I realized we're all alone. I think this is where I started. I don't know if to say praying because I think it was much more than praying. At first, I said all the prayers that I know. Like every prayer, I said kiddush in this bathroom in Shabbat morning.
Kiddush, when I explain for people who don't know, it's a prayer you say over wine on the Sabbath. For those listeners that don't know, so it's funny. We're laughing only because it's a prayer that doesn't fit the moment. And I think what you're sharing is like you're pulling at straws. Anything that sounded like a connection you were going to make.
Yeah, I was like. I'm going to try everything. So after I said all the prayers that I know, so I was starting to talk directly to God. I was like, okay, he's my father. Like, God is our father and I'm his daughter. And what our parents want from us, like our parents just want us to talk with them and to share with them. Like when I was a kid and I had a bad day in school, if my mom really wanted me to tell her about this so she can help me. Because if I'm not telling to her this, so she can't help me. So I figured out this is what I need to do. Like, if I'm really believing he's my father, so why should I talk to him like he is my father?
It's beautiful.
So I really started to talk with him. And I had, like, my whole life I was talking to God, like, before the bed or, like, stuff like this. But this is the first time I really felt like someone is listening on the other line. Like, I could feel that he's listening. Mm-hmm. And, like, every second that I'm talking with him and they're not opening our door, I was like, I will keep doing this. This is what I need to do. So at some point I felt like something from my head in here, from the top of my head, was opening. Like I felt like, I don't know how to say it in English, you know?
A pipe channel.
Yeah, so I felt like a channel is coming up from my head and I felt like an euphoric feeling in all my body. I was like shaking, but in a good way. I don't know, vibrating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at this point, I was telling him, I want the whole sky will tear apart and everybody would hear me. I want everybody to hear me now. And to save me and to save my friends, because I need to come back to my mother. She's waiting me. Like, all I was thinking about is, like, my mother can't, like, experience that, like, this experience of me dying. Like, I wasn't scared to die. Like, if I'm dying, I'm just dying.
Were you always like that about death? Did you always feel that way about death? Or this moment, that's how you felt?
I think that always I felt like this, because when you're dying, it's not like it's hurting you because you're dead. You don't care. But like my mom is still alive and she can't to experience this. Like she can't. I'm not allowing this. And like I knew she was really worried because I didn't answer and pick up her calls, because I knew if I'm going to pick her phone call, I'm just going to be anxious and like, I don't need to hear her crying now. This is not the time. And at this point, I was feeling like somebody's hugging me. So I opened my eyes and I'm looking and nobody's hugging me, but I still get the feeling that someone is really hugging me like hard. So like, I really wanted to laugh at this point. I just really wanted to laugh. Like, I was feeling so happy. I can't even, like, describe it to you. I was feeling peaceful. But at the same time, I'm hearing all kibbutz Be'eri getting slaughtered. I'm hearing women begging for their lives. I'm hearing the screams of children. I'm hearing people getting burned alive. So it was really, really hard to hear all of this. But like I really had faith in me. Like I really felt it. So after 4 hours, we're in this bathroom. I'm speaking to this friend and I'm hearing them starting to open all of the doors that I tried to open at first with just shooting on the locks. So I'm telling this friend, listen, where are you? Like, where are all the units? Our door is the next. Like, this is the end. I'm sorry. And I really even thought for a minute, so maybe I feel so calm because this is the moment, like, I'm dying. Mm. Like, it's before my death.
Mm.
And I heard helicopters. So I sent him a message and I was like, I hear helicopters and I heard a tank. So you need to shoot at us, like immediately. Shoot at our building so the terrorist would be distracted. So after 2 minutes, I'm hearing boom, boom, boom. All the ceiling is starting like a little bit to fall on us, like not collapsing, but a little bit fall on us, and all the walls are shaking. And we're hearing the terrorists are starting to run away from this place. Wow. And it was like a one door before ours. Wow. Wow. Just one door. All the stuff that happened to us couldn't be a coincidence, because if we were coming to Kibbutz Be'eri when the police officer told us, so maybe they were shoot at us. So we needed these few minutes so we can come back to there. And everything was so accurate and so like at the exact point where he needed to be. So after these six and a half hours, two soldiers that came with their Kaya Picanto from their home just come to Be'eri and told us, we heard there's a lot of mess in Be'eri, so we came to fight. And they came with a guy from Kibbutz Be'eri named Ziv Shilon. He was brutally murdered a few minutes after we left.
Really?
Yeah. And three soldiers of Magav also came. And the first thing they did, like, was asking for a cigarette. Everybody was so stressed. Like, they were saying, we're not smoking, but, like, just give us something. And after this, they were just taking all the bodies. Like, when we opened the door, we saw what we heard. There is no words to describe. My brain couldn't catch it's real because it was so surreal. And there was a lot of beheaded bodies or just body parts all over the place, like a hand or a leg or a head, stuff like this, and a lot of burned bodies. So what they started to do is just like to put in one group all of the Jewish
bodies,
and in the other side, the terrorist bodies. They took all the weapon and put it in one place. So we started to look if there's someone alive. Everybody was dead except one person. We tried to help him. He was with 20 shots in his body, I think. Something like this. And he was like a really big person. So we thought, okay, maybe he's still going to manage to be alive after this. Because he had a pulse and he was breathing a little bit. And so we told him, you need to tell my mother that I love her. And he closed his eyes. So we decided to still take him with us because he still had the pulse. So as I said, he was a big person. So with 3 or 4 people just took him and put him in our Jeep. And they told us there's a checkpoint in Alumim. But the road is still full of terrorists, so we should stay care. So we're again back to on the road 232 to Kibbutz Alumim. And the road was apocalyptic, like I never seen something like this, even in movies. The whole road was full of smoke, full of rockets that fell on the road, full of cars, like a lot of cars. They were all burned. A lot of burned bodies in these cars. A lot of body parts on the road. A lot of just heads, beheaded bodies, opened bodies, women that are not wearing nothing, just with their legs spread or something on the road. We couldn't like even say a word like, we just looked through our windows because we needed to look from our windows to see if there's terrorists are coming. So we couldn't like to escape these looks. So we're approaching to Kibbutz Alumim. There was 2 cars with soldiers, 2 Savannahs. A lot of bodies, like some of terrorists, some of soldiers. There was only one safe vehicle that could take Gilad and the other injured person from there. And so me and Dor, we were staying with the soldiers in Alumim. So Gilad and the other person was driving to the hospital. And we stayed for maybe three and a half more hours. So the whole time they were having battles with the terrorists that were surrounding us again and again and again. The first thing that the soldier that saw us coming from the car did was like hugging me. He's like, you need water, you need rest, you need hug, what you need. And like I was hug, definitely hug. And he hugged me for 2 minutes. And this is the point where I cried for the first time. Because I was feeling like a little bit more safer.
You broke down, yeah.
Yeah, because finally, like I see someone with the IDF forms and I see some weapons that I can actually do something with them and not pointed at me.
And you didn't see any more terrorists at that point?
No, I saw.
You did
see? Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were like surrounded us the whole time. They were having battles with them the whole time.
How many soldiers were there in this group?
And 20.
And how many civilians were there? How many?
Just me and all.
Wow.
Yeah. We were the only civilians and we were without any arm. So they also didn't want to give us.
Why? Do you know how to use? Did you and Dor?
Me, no. But Dor, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, but Dor.
Dor is a superhero. I don't know. Dor, I'm sure he knows how to shoot a gun.
No, but, he knows. Like he was on the IDF, like in some serious unit. Yeah. And I'm sorry. My PTSD is hitting me, so I'm forgetting, like, what I'm talking about all the time.
Because you get lost in the what happened, I think.
No, I'm like, my memory is like so hurt after this because of the PTSD, so I can't remember nothing. So one of the battles, me and Dor, we were hiding behind a big stone and we saw something shiny on the floor. We decided to pick it up. And it was a ring, and it told Shema Yisrael, Adonai Elohenu, Adonai Echad, on the ring.
Wow.
And this is like the what we were saying for all of these hours. It was like a mantra for us, the Shema Yisrael. It was a mantra, so me and Dor was screaming it. We were saying this the whole time. And then we found this ring, so... As I said, there is no such a thing as
coincidence.
Like everything is accurate. Everything is happening for a reason. And like we had to find this ring just to know this is what really saved us. This is what really helped us. So if it's not was clear for us, like this is... And after this 3.5 hours, we were like head to home. The only thing we were screaming from the second we got out of there to the second we got home is like, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Because when we were in this bathroom, I thought in my head, the whole country was occupied and we need to think about a plan how we're staying in the fields for a week, how we should stay and how we need to hide and where we can get water and supplies and stuff like this. So I'm really glad that it didn't happen.
It's interesting that you point that out because, you know, when what you went through, most people might not be thank you, but what you thought you thought you even lost more than you had lost. Like you thought you had no home to go back to, no food. So then all of a sudden it puts things in perspective and then you're even more filled with gratitude because at least, you know, and it's such, there's so many lessons in your stories and what you've experienced and what you've shared. And I think it's not only we're so grateful that you're both alive and that you made it, but it's so inspiring for us and for our listeners to, and such an important reminder of we are never alone, that the Creator is always with us and that we just don't notice it and we don't hear it and we don't tap into it.
I think it's like inside of us. Yeah. Like I have a new theory that I told Shoham a few days ago that I think that after this happened to me, I'm not saying that I'm a good person or something like this. I'm really trying to be. But every time I do something for someone else or something that is good, like not lying and like really telling the truth or doing something for someone else, I'm feeling how I'm becoming much more closer to this creator or God or however you want to call it. Like every time I do something that is not selfish, the part of the goddess in me, it's coming much more bigger and much more, I can feel it. Like I can feel the light is bigger and bigger and bigger every time that I do something that it's not for me, something that it's not selfish. So I think that maybe I was saved in the October 7th because on that moment when I was jumping off the Jeep, when I was surrounded by terrorists, because I wasn't selfish. I wanted to sacrifice myself for my friends. I think this is the point where I came the most close to God that I could get because I wasn't thinking about myself. Yeah. So after this, it's really giving you a perspective of how much you need to do for other people because it's make you feel much more good with yourself. And like, I'm feeling much more closer to God. Every time that I do something good, I'm feeling much more closer and closer and closer. So.
Well, we have big smiles on our faces because this is what we teach with Kabbalah and this is what we live. And for us, it's so like, just we're smiling because when you learn it, it's one thing. When you live it and you experience it and you feel it so completely, it's just a beautiful thing to witness. And of course, we aim to have those moments. We're constantly looking for that connection. But what's really beautiful here is that it found you and then it's undeniable. And now, you know, it's part of you, right? And mm-hmm. and now you're part of the greater, bigger picture, the greater good. And then in that, there's a responsibility, right? Which is why it's so amazing that you're going around telling your stories.
Yeah, isn't that beautiful? No, I was going to say, you said you have a theory. I was going to say, it's an ancient theory. It's an ancient theory and true.
Yeah, because Absolutely. Like I never like learned Kabbalah or something like this. So it's fine you're saying this right now. Because I learned it on the hard way.
Nice. Yeah, but I think you'd be, if you read some of the texts now, I think you'll be blown away because literally everything that you have shared is in the teachings. Mm-hmm. So
beautiful. Shom, is it something you want to share? If you there's a message that you want to give to our listeners.
As Liel said, we're here for a purpose, and God didn't save us for nothing. He saved us for us to spread our light and be better persons than we've been before and share our love with the world. And about her story, after she said to me her theory, I told her בצלמו ובדמותו. איך אומרים את זה באנגלית?
In his form and image.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have God's part in every part of ourselves.
Yes.
And he wants us to spread it to the world. To be better. Much better than we are now.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Do you want to share the...
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I don't mind. In 6:30, when the party was closed, me and my friends were all together.
How many friends were you there together with?
Something like 10. We've been exactly in the same moment together when they stopped the music and we've just took our stuff and went to the parking lot. And it was a lot of traffic, so we couldn't get out of the area. So we stayed here. We stayed in the parking lot near the car, something like hour and a half. My friend sat near the car and I was traveling the parking lot to help other people with our stuff because it was a lot of screams and shouts and crying people out there. So I've tried to help them as much as I could. And in something like 8 o'clock, my friends called me and told me, Shoham, we have to go now. The traffic is better now, but still much traffic. So I went back to the car and I was waiting in the traffic, and my windows were open. So I heard someone talking in the phone, and she said someone shot in the entrance. And in this moment, I saw like 200 people running, and I was not thinking, just running out from the car. And 5 minutes later, I went back to the car because nothing happened. And I was driving to the exit, and I was just nearly the exit, like 3 cars ahead, and I'm out from the parking lot. And at this moment, the police officer speak with the speaker and told us, lay down now. So I just left the car, closed the windows and locked it. And at this moment, the terrorist came with their truck and just started to shoot everyone they saw, like everyone.
You were hiding in the...
No, we just ran away, like all the people who were still in the parking lot ran away for their lives, like 2,000 people. And I was running back to the party area. And then we heard shots from the other side. So we knew that we are circled. So we tried to search for a place to hide in the party area. And I saw a tent this time. So I just hid there for like 10 minutes. And it was so hot. But I had water with me, so everything...
Are you by yourself or with...
Yeah, alone. But there was something like 40, 50 people in the party area who were also hiding. And 10 minutes later, my friend called me and he told me, Shoham, come now to under the stage. So I left the tent and I went to under the stage to hide there with my friend. And it was there like 30 other people who were also hiding there, and we were hiding there for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, and some angel came to us to under the stage and told us, leave now, they are coming.
Is it angel?
Human.
Yeah.
Human form angel. And they told us, leave now, they are coming. And we left the stage, and people were killed there under the stage after we left. And I was running first to the woods, and everyone were following me. 30 people, I think. And at some point I saw just fields around me, and I knew if we are keep running in the fields, they would shoot us like ducks. So we were hiding in the low area. Few hours, I think, 5 to 6 hours without water, and it was so hot. Someone went to search for better place to hide, and he saw bodies, and he told everyone, come help me to bring the bodies. And the guards from the party were coming to us, and we thought that they are terrorists, and we kept just be scared all the time. And we tried to call the police, but they told us, yeah, we are on the way. 5 hours on the way. And at 11 o'clock, I think, my battery died. And I was so scared, like, all the time. And this moment, I felt so calm. I relaxed myself, breathe in, breathe out, and lay down on a tree. And at this moment, I knew, I felt that it's okay to die today. And I tried to rest and sleep, but I couldn't. And I think 2 hours, 2.5 hours later, we heard so much screaming and shouting in Arabic from the party area. And we saw someone who dressed like a ninja, everything black, and a mask. And we opened the discussion about he's a Jew, he's a terrorist. And few seconds later, we heard boom. He shot an RPG at us. It was 20 people who were sitting together, like in a circle. And I think he tried to shot them, but he missed in 2 meters. And the fragments were hit everyone around them. And we started to run on a hill. And his friends were shooting us with their Kalashnikovs. And people shot in the legs, in the back, and keep running. At some point, 10 minutes later, we saw a body. So we hid there for... At this point, we were 20 people, and the other people were moving to the other direction. And all of them kidnapped or died there. Yeah. And we kept moving back to the road. And we saw a police officer and 2 soldiers. And we thought that they are terrorists too because they came with Kalashnikovs. And a moment later, they just told us, run with your hands in the air and shout your names. So we done this. And they
towards them. So you're running towards them.
And they took us back to the road. There was a tank there and like other 10 police officers and the soldiers and something like 70 survivors. And they told us we don't have any ammo. And
zero?
No, like
very little.
Very little amount. Oh. And it was some terrorists who were near us. They were with handcuffs. Mm. Half an hour later, they gave us something to drink because we were so, so thirsty. And in 2.5, a lot of soldiers came and they were coming to fight the terrorists and their trucks took us to Ofakim. And there was a lot of survivors there and a lot of police officers because there was still a fight in Ofakim. A lot of terrorists were there also. And the police officers were in the entrance of Ofakim. They spread us to our homes. So we came to Ofakim and then directly
but to... What time? So what time did you get to Ofakim?
2.5.
2:30.
Yeah, wow. 3 maybe.
Yeah, and you have friends who didn't survive?
Yeah, of course. It's a big community, the Nova. So you know a lot of people. It's a big family.
Yeah, they're also very, very helping for us after the Nova. The Nova community is arranging a lot of gatherings and a lot of retreats for
this. In Cyprus, right? There was one in Cyprus?
Yeah, met in Cyprus.
Oh, really? That's one of the,
It's one of the retreats, yeah. So they're really trying to help us also with mental health, also mm-hmm. like with everything they can. Mm-hmm. They're really, really mm-hmm. doing this because like the state is busy now because mm-hmm. we're in a war. So it's really important. So like,
your necklace really, is Nova.
Yeah.
Do you have one? You have one as well.
It's from another survivor who do this by herself.
Yeah, it's handmade by a Nova survivor.
Well, thank you. Thank you both for sharing, but not only your stories, but what you've learned from them and what you're doing. We both, I think, Monica and I find it very inspiring. We feel privileged to be able to share your story with our listeners.
We're so happy that you spent this time with us, that you've opened your hearts, and that truly that you are alive and healthy to be here and to spread your love and your wisdom and your energy and light. So thank you. Really, truly inspiring.
Keep spreading your light, right?
Yes.
Keep spreading your light. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.